Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, welcome everybody to the Wild Ginger Running YouTube channel, live broadcast and subsequent podcast. This is the second episode in our new series for 2024, Last Place and Proud of It, which celebrates the runners who have come last on some of the UK's most famous and most brutal ultras. So this episode we will be talking to the incredible Graham Bruder, who came 80th place and the last Brit on the 268-mile spine race last January. Welcome, Graham. How are you doing today?
Very good, thank you, Claire. Thank you.
Awesome. So we have got a ton of questions for you, Graham, ahead of this year's spine race that starts this Sunday. But first, we have to mention our fantastic sponsor, NAC Sports Nutrition. So they make energy bars, waffles, energy and recovery powders, and real food purees in pouches. So last Sunday, I'm eating my way through the range, and I tried this lovely chocolate waffle, which was completely delicious and very easy to eat. It kind of dissolves on your tongue, so it doesn't need much chewing. So I also really like that NAC use sustainable and high quality ingredients as well. So I'm looking forward to munching a fair few of these on the ARC 50 this January. So go to NAC.com for more, and we are going to get a 15% discount code as well, which I will put in the film description below or the podcast show notes. So enjoy that and keep checking back for that, because I will get it soon. So Graham, thank you. Sorry about that. And thank you for coming on. Thanks for sparing your time to talk to us today. Welcome to the show. The spine is a big deal, right? Winter, 268 miles. You don't just rock up and race that. You need a mountain of experience first. So let's start at the beginning. What was your journey into ultra running? Where did it all start for you?
So for me, started around about 2010. If I go back to 2010, I was knocking on about 19 stone. Smoked quite a lot, probably too much, drank too much, and had my first child, Dylan, in 2010, and decided it was probably time to get a little bit, or let's say a little bit fit, to get fit.
Amazing. So,
and I think the first race I did was a 10K, which I couldn't even run. And I think it took me about an hour and 15 minutes to get around a 10K, and I couldn't actually comprehend that people could run the whole 6 miles without stopping.
Wow.
And that's kind of changed a little bit if you look to where I am now. So,
yeah. Fantastically,
it spiraled a little bit from 5K to 10K to going a little bit further. And around, I think, 2011, 2012, I got into a few ultras, like the shorter distance, maybe the 30 milers. I'd done a marathon by that point. Got my marathon time down to about 3:40.
Wow.
And then, I don't think I could do that now. And then did, I think the Warner was probably my first long distance, which was horrendous and I hated every minute of it.
How far is that then, the Warner?
76, I think it is.
Oh, wow.
76 and miles.
Was that your first ultra?
No, that was my first one longer than 30-odd miles.
Okay.
didn't really enjoy it, if I'm honest. I think I cried for the last mile. I did the one, and through 2011, 2012, I did quite a bit. My first 100 attempt was UTSW, which was Ultra Trail Southwest, I think it is, with Endurance Life. So I attempted that in 2012.
Wow, this is like 2 years since starting running.
Yeah.
Had you like lost all the weight in a year then?
I went from about 19 to about 14 in a couple of years.
Wow, that's incredible. So, congratulations. Like a weight loss is really difficult to do. So yeah, all credit to you for doing that.
I would say at that time, I think I was probably doing a bit too much. You know, I was going out all the time, and I focused quite a lot on trying to do speed work, which I don't really think suits for these really long distance runs.
Yeah, you don't need much speed work to do an ultra, do you? Just maybe one session a week.
I don't think you do. It helps if you're going to mix it up a little bit and be doing marathons and 10Ks and things like that at the same time. But if your goal is to finish 100 or that type of distance, I don't think it makes any difference whatsoever. Probably a bit controversial, but I don't even think you need to run that much, to be honest.
Yeah, a lot of hiking. Yeah. For being middle of the pack, back of the pack. Yeah, I discovered that when I started doing
and
some
it's,
long
you know, it's learning stuff. To eat properly. You know, it's learning to eat properly and fuel your body. I think that's one of the most important things, fueling and looking after your feet and having a bit of a plan.
Yes, having a bit of a plan
so you don't get lost.
Yes, okay. Yeah.
So I kind of got into the 100 journey in about 2012 and didn't finish UTSW, DNF'd at about 90 miles.
Oh, no.
which wasn't very nice. And then tried the Cotswold Century about six times and didn't finish that either.
Oh, yeah.
I've done 70, 60, 50. And if you go to last year, 2020, I had a bit of a gap. I didn't really do anything for quite a long time. And then in 22, I finished my first 100, which was the Cotswold Century.
Hey.
Last place again.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. Congratulations.
Yeah, and then, did the spine in January.
Amazing. And what made you sign up to the spine? Because, I mean, 100 to almost 300 miles in the middle of winter, non-stop, going through the night. There's a whole different set of skills there, really, isn't there?
I don't know, if I'm honest. I always wanted to finish 100. The 100 was my aim, and it was kind of like the monkey on my back for ages, that especially the Cotswold Century, that I'd been trying to finish that and just kept messing it up. But every year I messed it up, and more often than not through not planning it properly, I'd say.
Yeah.
Trying to go too quick, you know, trying to be too far inside the cutoff. One year I got lost before the first checkpoint.
Oh, no.
And I'd even done it five times before and still managed to get lost.
Okay.
And when I'd finished that, I'd entered the spine earlier on in the year. And my thinking was, if I don't finish the Cotswold, I'm not going to do the spine. Because if I can't do 100, I'm not going to be able to do 268. And I finished it and then thought, well, yeah, let's do it.
Yeah. Nice one. So you finished that. You went for the spine. And so for anybody who has not heard of the spine race, can you describe the race for us? Like, where does it start? What's the route like? What's the terrain like?
It's horrific, if I'm honest.
Absolutely. You're really selling it to us here, Graham. Yeah.
So it starts in Edale, which is in Derbyshire. You have 168 hours, which is 7 days, to get from Edale all the way up to Kirk Yeltham, which is on the Scottish border, all off-road, full length of the Pennine Way, and there is nothing in terms of support on that course. It's self-supported. You have checkpoints. They're roughly about every 40-ish miles. And in terms of place, when you say self-supported, I carried, I think I was 10, 11 kilos I carried around the full race.
Oh, right.
The kit list is quite an extensive kit list. So you need to have cooking equipment, not that I used it, cooking equipment, bivy, sleeping bag, spare, everything.
Yeah.
Spare wet weather gear, spare socks, spare mid layers, spare everything. And About 3,000 calories of food you need to have from checkpoint 1, 3, 5. So there's quite a lot of gear you've got to carry around with you. And I'll be honest, I massively underestimated it. Massively underestimated it, because you've also got the weather as well. And in my, I'm one of those that likes to plan it quite a lot. So I have a lovely little Excel spreadsheet going of where I'm going to finish, and this is my checkpoints. And I stupidly looked at my 100 time, which was 31 hours, and you think, oh, 3 miles an hour. And I had a plan that was having me finish in the spine on Friday at midday.
Uh-huh.
No chance.
So that's
absolutely
what...
No chance.
So Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, so 6 days.
Yeah, so I had a plan that I thought I would finish in around about 140 hours.
Yeah.
I thought I'd have a day free. I actually had a weekend away booked with my other half on the Saturday night, and I was saying to her that I'd still be back for it.
Uh-huh.
The reality of it is I cried for a week after the finish. I just couldn't stop crying.
Oh, bless you. Were you really proud of yourself? Was it like happy crying, or like deep trauma that unearthed?
I mean, we'll probably come on to a bit more detail, but I would say if it had been a day longer, it's like borderline PTSD territory, that race.
Really?
So
bad. My goodness.
I managed maybe 8 hours sleep in the whole time.
Oh, wow, across the week.
In 165 hours, I managed about 8 hours sleep.
Oh, wow. I can't even work out what 165 hours is in days. It's just
well,
too
far. So we started Sunday morning at 8 a.m. I finished... The cutoff was the following Sunday morning at 8 a.m. And I think I finished around 5 a.m.
So just 3 hours before the cutoff.
3 hours inside the cutoff. And in that whole time, definitely less than 10 hours sleep. It was pretty hard going.
That is, I don't know how you kept motivating yourself to get up and carry on, but we'll come to that in just a minute, because I want to know a bit about your training before we cover the actual race. So it looks like pretty muddy and pretty rocky on that route, and there's over 10,000 metres of climbing within that 268 miles. So it's really badass, that Pennine Way. Were there any sort of barriers to your training that you had to overcome? Like your job, is that really stressful and busy? How many kids have you got running around there?
I don't really have much time. I think we took, like I said at the start, when I first started getting into this, I did a lot of training. You know, I'd be out running all the time. Probably too much. There's a balance, I think, in doing this, especially when you're doing the long distance runs. There's a lot of people that I met on the spine that I'd spent weekends away wrecking elements of the route and spending 2 days out running. I just don't have the time for that at all. So I'm a commercial director where I work. It's quite a lot going on at work. I've got 3 kids. Got a 13-year-old, I've got a 5-year-old, and got a 3-year-old.
Oh, a 3-year-old as well. Yeah. Wow.
My other half's at home with 2 of them, and obviously one's at school. So for me to get home from work and then say I'm going out running for 2 hours.
Not impressed.
Don't go down too well. So I grab time where I can, if I'm honest, and I'll try and get out early some mornings. But more often than not, I'd say in that year going up to the spine, apart from doing the Cotswold Century, I don't think I was out for more than 2 hours.
Yeah, at a time.
I just can't do it anymore. I haven't got the time to be able to do that.
Yeah.
Probably hence the reason I finished last in most of the rest that I do.
I think it's incredible that you finished. So like within that, what did your weekly training look like then? Like what kind of mileage were you hitting, or were you focusing on ascent?
So again, one of the issues that I've got where I am, I live in Chelmsford. Not exactly the most mountainous region in the UK.
No.
I don't really have any hills.
A few little tiny rolling bits.
I don't really have any hills to go out on. So for my training, it was more prep. I knew I had to carry the gear. I knew I had to have a fair old weight on my back. So quite early on in this journey, when I got all my gear, I'd go out with my gear. So I'd go out with my gear, get the backpack on, and just get used to going out with fully laden as much as possible, getting out in the wet weather gear, getting out, getting getting through my feet wet, getting used to all that type of stuff. In terms of mileage, probably 3 or 4 times a week. But even then, I'm not going out for hours. And there's a lot of people I know that spend a lot of time going out for long distances, just don't have the time to do it. And I think, you know, with a lot of ultras now, there's loads of people don't have time to do it because it's feral commitment.
Yeah, it really is. And I really hear you because I've got a 3-year-old as well. And so you have a 3-year-old and a 5-year-old and a 13-year-old, juggling all those different needs and people at various different life stages. And they, you know, they need more attention as they get to teenagehood, yeah, don't they, as well? Hannah Basley is just watching live and she said, "I'm in awe that Graham finished, especially hearing how limited he was with training, etc." It's incredible. So you didn't do any recces. You had that 100 miler as a training race sort of thing. Did you do, you've mentioned that you do a lot of other prep as well, like not just the physical training. Was there anything on the mandatory kit list that you had to treat yourself to? Like, what were your plans around nutrition, sleep and all that kind of thing?
I'll be honest, most of my plans, I'd say, went out the window.
As you went to the race? So you planned really well and then just went out the window.
I thought I'd planned really well, in terms of sleep and timings and cutoffs. I thought I'd planned really well. In hindsight, I hadn't. The bit that I had planned quite well was my gear. So I had all the right gear. I did do a fair bit of work on the kit list, and even that, it's an expensive exercise, this. And there's a lot of people buying the lightest and cheaper, the lightest and most expensive gear. I went the other way. The cheapest gear that passed the kit list. But you know, it worked for me. That worked for me, and I got it all relatively early so that I could make sure that I was used to carrying it around. And then I did, because I knew I'd be out there for a long time, I made sure I carried more in terms of food. Because for me, that's always been the bit that's got me. Because doing any of these long distance running, my opinion is it's your stomach that goes first. You know, as soon as you start feeling sick, you really struggle. You know, you struggle to push through that bit. And generally, it does pass. But I made sure that I carry rubbish with me in terms of food, tailwind drinks, just to give them, so that I'm continually drinking. I always have one with just water and one with an energy drink as well. And then I have a lot of rubbish. So I take crisps in a bag, and on 100, I have all dry pizza and food that I know that my stomach can eat without, I don't know, if you try and do gels all the time, you've got no chance.
So you went for the real food option.
Yeah, you can do gels on a shorter distance run. Try doing them for 100 odd hours and your stomach could be an absolute mess. I spent a lot of time working out where I'd get to in terms of checkpoints. In the end, that was rubbish.
And what were your plans around the whole sleeping thing? Because you mentioned that you only slept for like under 10 hours for that whole week. Did you plan to do that?
No. My original plan, I've got my list here. There is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. There's 8 actual checkpoints, main checkpoints where you get to your gear. There's 1, 2, 3. There's 5 checkpoints where you get to your gear.
Yeah, so you've got a drop bag there.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, you get a drop bag, and around about 40 miles ish between those. And my original plan was, I can run 100 miles, so I'll do 100 miles, and then I know I can go for 30 odd hours without any sleep, so I'll do that. I'll get to checkpoint 2, which was in Hawes, which was 100 and something miles, have a sleep there, and then maybe get to checkpoint 5 and have another 4 and have another sleep there, and get to 5 and have another sleep there. That's what I thought I was going to do. Didn't think I was going to have a sleep at 1, didn't think I was going to have a sleep at 1.5. Because I thought that I could easily do the first 30, 40 hours. I was so far out of those times that I got to a point, I met up with somebody else, Dave, and we kind of plodded around it together. And we got to a point by about, I'm just looking at the distance, about 60, 70 miles where I could have, we could hardly see where we were going. The sleep deprivation was so bad.
Yeah,
Sleep deprivation on that event is the worst thing I've ever experienced.
Yeah, well, even worse than having a newborn.
Oh, yeah. I mean, talking hallucinations that got to a point where I didn't really didn't know what was real and wasn't real. It was that bad.
Yeah. Oh, wow. That's amazing that you pushed through.
It was so bad that I was seeing things that weren't there. I had a GPS that was talking to me that wasn't talking to me. It was horrific.
Yeah. Well, and so it was horrible hallucinations, was it? Not like nice ones? Because I know Jasmine Paris mentioned seeing like horses' heads in rocks and things like that and thinking, oh, that's funny. But was this like not a nice experience?
I'd say it develops. The hallucinations develop as you go through it. So initially, because it was snowing, you see little faces in the snow and that's fine. And we're running along and the trees had weird shapes and that was kind of fine. Getting down into, I think it was Bellingham, I felt there was somebody running next to me that jumped in front of me, which I think was me falling asleep, if I'm honest.
Oh, okay.
Me falling asleep because it gave you a little bit of a shock and it kind of woke you up again.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say they were horrible hallucinations, but they were just confusing because I didn't know. We came into Burness and I've got my GPS in my hand and it doesn't talk and it doesn't tell me to turn left and right. No. But in my mind, it was telling me to turn left and right.
Uh-huh.
It was saying at the next junction, turn right. It never did do that, but I thought it was. And I spent 2 hours going through the settings trying to turn it off.
Trying
to work out how to change the settings and turn off the voice that was on my GPS, which wasn't actually there.
Yeah, it didn't exist. Yeah.
Sleep deprivation was probably one of the hardest bits of the whole event.
Yeah, it does sound really hard. So just winding back just slightly to the start line after this preparation that didn't... you tried to prepare, but obviously you'd never done something like this before.
I did the most I could do.
Yeah.
If I'm honest, I did the most I could do and I was happy going into it that I knew I'd done 100. I knew that what was coming and I'd prepped as much as I could. So I turned up there happy.
Yeah. So on the start line, how are you feeling? You're feeling happy?
And I'd say pretty nervous at the start, just about what's coming. Got all the gear. You know you've passed kit check. It's quite an intensive registration. Normally you turn up for an event and you might get someone have a quick look through your bag.
Yeah. Show this thing, show that thing.
Yeah, the spine is you turn up the day before.
Yeah.
And because I was a first timer, everything is checked.
Tip it all out into a tray, go for it all. That's good. That's good safety.
You've got a full bag and virtually every item that I had to have was checked. Or not everything, but nearly everything, to an extent where they will check whether it's the right type of waterproof, which is brilliant, you know, because they're doing it for a reason.
Mm.
They're doing it for a reason, and more often than not, you need everything you've got. So the registration was quite full on. You get checked in, we had somewhere to stay the night before. You wake up 4 hours before start because you're nervous about it. Just want to get going, and there's another race briefing, there's a medical brief, you know, there's all these different briefings you got to go through, and stupidly that they say go at the start, and I guess the experienced people don't do this, but you run, you know, you run out and you're running up the hill, and why am I doing this?
Yeah.
I never know run up a hill, but because it was the start of the spine, I thought, oh, I'm going to run. Look at me go. So off I plod up the hill, and I think within about an hour, all my waterproof gear was soaking, my hands were freezing, and I was thinking, oh, my God, I've got a long way to go.
Oh, no. Yeah. Well, it's good to run out of the starting pen, isn't it, because it looks good on the photos, and someone will be there with a video camera.
Yeah.
So you've talked a bit about the sleep deprivation, which does sound like really taxing. Were there any highs during the race? Because it does sound a little bit bleak at the moment. Was there any point where you were like, oh yeah, this is why I came, I'm enjoying this? Or is it type 2 pleasure, like you like it now that it's done and you now have to do it again?
I knew I was going to finish I'd say, from the first 5 minutes of it.
Really?
There was no way I was going to stop. There was absolutely no way, unless something happened to me, I wasn't going to stop. And for me, that was one of the best bits about it, because we'd get to a checkpoint and there's people in all kinds of pain, and, you know, my feet were an absolute mess by the end of it.
What, yours were?
Mine were.
Yeah.
Absolute mess. And there's a lot of pain that you go through, but it was quite motivating knowing I'm going to be all right. Because we'd get to the checkpoint and, you know, I think it was by the second day that I'd met up with somebody else, and we kind of went round together. We knew we were going to get out of there. So we knew we'd get in, get our gear sorted. And that was quite motivating in a way to know that, right, let's do the next bit. Right, let's do the next bit. Let's do the next bit. And you've got to break it down into these little sections. You know, and the scenery's, maybe now I'd say it was amazing. I think at the time I didn't think it was amazing. certain sections of the Pennine Way, which are just awful.
What, like really boggy or really stony?
I think they've looked for the worst possible route across the country. If there's the option of a steady incline, or there's an option which says turn right, go down a ridiculously steep hill and climb up a hill that you shouldn't be able to climb up, or we'll go that way.
Oh yeah.
Pennine Way seems that the whole route seems to be like that. Which is the easy route? Okay, well, let's go that way.
Yeah, let's not do that one.
It just seems to be like that all the time. You know, and there was paths you're going through you can hardly walk on, and it was just horrific. But the scenery at times was amazing. Sunrise, brilliant.
Yeah.
Sunset, amazing. Took a picture of every sunrise. And it's a great experience, I think.
Yeah.
Looking back. I did say I'd never do it again. I've been back twice now.
Oh, have you done it? You've done it again?
I went back for the summer.
Oh, wow. So you've done the summer spine as well?
DNF'd at 182 miles with heat stroke.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah.
So you'll have to do that one again.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I don't think I'll be allowed to. I only entered this one on the day that the entries closed, which was 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, for the Challenger.
Challenger, yes. Yeah.
So, are you going to do the north or the south?
North.
The north. That's a longer one, isn't it?
160 miles, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, well, that sounds like a good distance. Yeah. And we've got a question from Hannah, who says she wants to know about the cutoffs. Yeah. Like, were you close to the cutoffs, and did that add much stress? And she also wants to know about your feet, so I'll ask you that after.
Cutoffs. If anyone's doing the spine, the biggest piece of it's not even advice. The bit that you need to know: the cutoffs are the time you leave, not the time you get in.
Yeah.
I thought it was the time you get in.
Right.
No, it's the time you leave. First cutoff was all right, with quite a lot of time. Second cutoff didn't really feel under too much pressure. Although in my plan, I would have had about 10 hours spare. I think I had about 4 hours, which felt like a long time. After that, it was... It's all I thought about from about 100 miles to 268 was cut off.
Yeah.
Because it's so close to cut off. It's not a simple process either at each checkpoint, because you need to eat. They do great food at all the checkpoints. So you've got to get in, you've got to eat, you've got to change the gear in your bag, you've got to sort the batteries out for your head torch, you've got to change your bag of nutrition, you've got to try and sort your feet out. You can't leave a checkpoint unless you've got 50% charge on your phone.
Okay.
So make sure you get in and charge your phone. You've got to charge. I've got my watch as well, charge my watch up, and it became quite stressful.
Yeah, it's quite a logistical nightmare, isn't it? All of these electrical things to charge and food to get in and feet to sort.
They are, you know, and rightly so, they won't let you out if you don't tick all the boxes. They're very, what's the word?
Militant?
Yeah.
Strict?
I mean, it's...
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
To the second. You know, there's almost a countdown.
Yeah.
Be out of the door of the checkpoint on the second it closes. And at Middleton, we were last, me and Dave were last out at Middleton, which is checkpoint three. We were last out at Alston. We were last out at Bellingham. We were last out at every single one.
So you knew that you were last all the way through.
We were in the checkpoints where they were getting to the point of 5 minutes to go, 4 minutes to go, 3 minutes, and I'm still trying to sort my bag out. And we hadn't slept. We didn't have time to have a sleep. It was the cutoffs. They're there for a reason, obviously. But they are tough. They are for me. They were getting tougher to get to as well.
Yeah.
Because whilst the cutoff might have been 10 p.m., we knew we needed to be there at 8.
To do all the things, yeah. Otherwise, you'd be like out, but not being able to do much in the cold or the dark, maybe.
There was people at Alston frantically trying to get the phones to 50%. Mm. You know, you can't rush that. It kind of is what it is, you know,
yeah,
and you can't.
Imagine being timed out of a race because your phone's not at 50%. You'd be gutted, wouldn't you?
You'd be absolutely devastated.
Yeah,
but
you need to take a portable power bank and be doing it on the way.
And that's exactly what I do, but and I think that's what a lot of people do. But it's silly things like that that I know now. And as you get tireder, it's things like that that you start to forget about, you know. Batteries. I didn't take any batteries on the last leg, and luckily I was with somebody else, but my head torch was failing coming over the Cheviots. If I'd have been on my own, I'd probably really been struggling.
The
cutoffs are quite, I think if you're a fast runner, if you know you're going to be somewhere mid-range, they're absolutely fine, you know. You look at them, I looked at them beforehand thinking, what, 136, easy do that, but no.
Yeah, cumulatively. Were you just walking then? What percent did you literally just run that first hour and then the rest was all walking?
Ran quite a bit of the first stage to CP1, which was 40 odd miles. Sorry, tried to run. It was snowing. The path, I don't know if anyone's ever gone over Kinder Scout, but there's a load of slabs. Which when there's a layer of snow over the top, you can't tell where there's a slab and not a slab.
Uh-huh.
Did I want to go over and do my ankle in the first 20 miles? No.
Yeah.
So you kind of run where you can, but for me, I don't know how people, you know, Damien Hall's finishing days before us. I don't know how he's run a lot of that.
Yeah.
But I felt if I'd have tried to run more of it, I'd have ended up injuring myself. So didn't... Tried to run as much as I could on day one, on the first leg. Probably could have run a bit more, but felt I was fine on time. After that, just didn't bother, to be honest.
Yeah, just like fast walking with poles.
Yeah, we were trying to, you know, keep moving. If I look at my Strava time, generally moving at 3 miles an hour. Weren't actually doing 3 miles an hour because there's a lot of it where you're stopping, you're getting gear out your bag, you're messing around with clothing, you're changing gear all the time, and you end up doing 2 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm.
That's where we got to at the end. And I look at it now thinking, I can walk 4 miles an hour probably.
Yeah.
Why would it take me 2 miles an hour to do certain sections? But That's what it gets like.
Yeah, like so the average is taken down by the stopping and the doing of gear and stuff.
It massively comes down.
Yeah.
Even when you look at the cumulative time, you don't factor in the fact you need 2 hours at every checkpoint or 3 hours at every checkpoint. And
yes.
Yeah, the cutoffs are, I'd say if you're a half-decent runner, they're a breeze. The reality of the route and the climbing and the snow and the mud and the rain and the navigation and all the other messing around you've got to do, it's still quite a challenge.
Yeah, it sounds amazing. And we've had quite a few people watching live are really in awe of you. Nick Marlow says, thanks to Claire and Graham for this. Rain Man Smith says, as a 65-year-old back of the pack runner, I'm full of respect for Graham completing the spine. To do it at his stage of life when family life demands your time is doubly awesome. Stephen Law says, excellent effort. And Rain Man again says, I think this is a brilliant series and very motivating for those of us who are not amongst the racing whippets. So you're doing everybody a good service here, Graham.
Everyone
can do it. So it's fantastic. I want to talk to you a little bit more about the feet, because you said they were very painful, and Hannah also gets problems with her feet. So she's asked you here, how were the feet? It's foot pain from being on them so much that I struggle with in longer races. So yeah, what were your problems around the feet area?
So foot pain from being, I don't really get any issues with foot pain from being on them. My feet don't ache for being out on them for a long time. Blisters, I usually get the odd one. I had blisters on blisters on blisters on the spine in both the winter and the summer. I try to do as much work on my feet beforehand as possible. So I use, I can't remember what it's called, like a cream just to try and soften them up. I always tape them up before I go out. I know where I get my blisters, put tape all over them. I always use two layers of socks. So the Ingi toe socks, and on the spine, I used waterproof socks as well, which, if anyone wants to know, aren't waterproof.
Not after a while. They might do a stroll through a field full of soggy grass.
Yeah, they're waterproof for a very short amount of time. The medical teams are pretty good. Oh, sorry, I'd say pretty good. They're brilliant. They're amazing.
They're like a full-on hospital, aren't they? I've seen them in action. They're
like
amazing.
Full-on hospital. But, I had a lot of blisters. A lot of blisters.
And why do you think that was?
I don't know, to be honest. I don't know. I mean, I always get one, a certain toe, I always get a blister. And I can't sort it out. And I get it all the time. So I always make sure I tape that up and try to do something about it. But on the spine, I think it probably is just the amount of time you're out there.
Something's going to get in there, and some grit's going to get in there and do something.
They do get wet. There's nothing you can do about it. Yes, you could probably take 20 pairs of socks with you and change them all the time. I try to talc them up, air them out at every single checkpoint as much as possible, but I think you just got to accept you're going to get them, to be honest, and you just kind of got to get on with it. I had them the same in the summer as well. They were a mess, absolute mess. But everyone always says it, foot care. You've really got to change your socks, got to change them whenever you can do, but there's only so much you can do when you're out for that amount of time. Not fun.
Yeah. And so how do you deal with the pain of it? Because that's what I personally really struggle with as well, is the pain of the blisters. It's like stepping on a knife with each step. And I'm like, well, I'm not enjoying this. So I what am I doing? How did you reconcile that with yourself? Have you just got a really strong head?
Well, it's funny because by the time I got to Alston, which is about checkpoint 4, my feet hurt so much that when I left, the first few steps out of there was like, I can't carry on. It hurt so much. And the guy I was running with, Dave, was exactly the same. It goes weirdly. I don't know if it's as your feet warm up, or I don't know whether you just become immune to it. It seems to just disappear.
Oh.
You stop, you start, it's horrific, and it tends to ease off and go away.
Yeah, you kind of get used to it. Your mind's like, oh, they're not paying attention to this. I'll just dampen out that pain.
And we kind of got it in our heads that it was going to pass, and let's just just get on with it. And it did. I think there's so many other things going on as well at the time that, I don't know, maybe your body's just, it blanks it off a little bit. But yeah, they were pretty horrific. My feet were not a very nice sight at the end on either race, hospital for both of them to try and sort them out.
What, proper hospital? Actual hospital?
Yeah, hospital for both the winter and the summer to try to get them sorted out. But there's not much they can do about it. Just tape them all up, really.
Did they get infected then? Or was it just a question of getting them taped up properly?
I thought they'd been infected after the summer, but they weren't. And I had a lovely doctor who just ripped all the blisters off and told me I was an idiot for doing what I was doing. I think his words were, "What do you expect?"
Yeah.
But I don't know what other people do with the feet, but I think one of the things is you've got to remember what you did at the start and keep doing it. So I talc them up and taped them up, and at checkpoint one, I don't think I retaped. I thought, oh, it's fine, I'll carry on going. And maybe I should have done. But in the summer, I kept retaping them. But I have to say, without the medical staff, who are so good, you know, they must see some horrific sights. They just get on with it and help you all the time. You know, I think when we got into checkpoint five at Bellingham, you literally sit there and people are doing everything for you, pulling your boots off, getting your socks off, trying to help you with your feet, taking your phone off you to put it on charge, and you just sit there like a zombie as people try to get you in and out.
That's so good of them to take your phone off and charge it. And
they are so good.
Yeah, oh, that is amazing. And it did sound like the camaraderie on the race was pretty good. Like you mentioned your friend Dave quite a lot. Yeah. Had you met him before, or did you just sort of buddy up on the way round, similar paces?
We met up at some point on day one. He had a problem with his phone. He couldn't use his phone, so he borrowed my phone to phone his other half. And then we kind of drifted off a little bit, and then we met up again after checkpoint 1.5, and then we got to 2, and we kind of both came into 2 at the same time, and we just decided we'd stick together and just keep plodding on together. It does help. It really helps, because as you know, in any race there's always the time where you don't feel great and you either stop or you know it's going to pass. And I think from a bit of experience in doing this, more often than not, it passes. And having somebody else there, we kind of got each other through those lows.
Yeah, it sounds like you did use each other to good effect, and you got on and had a joke and a laugh and stuff.
Yeah.
And how was the navigation? I'm intrigued, because it is really bad conditions in January on the Pennine Way. You've got snow, the tracks are covered, you've got mud everywhere. How did that go?
There were certain sections which, you know, you look at the average time and why it takes you so long. You can't follow a path. You know, like you just said there is no track to follow. It's snowing, and the certain sections where you follow a river, brilliant, really simple to navigate, not much of an issue. There are other sections where you've got the GPS and you try to follow the GPS, which is great at the start. And the start of it's relatively easy. As you get towards the end with tiredness, sounds silly, but you forget how to use the GPS. There were sections on the last couple of days where we were more lucky. There was times where we must have climbed over a fence 3 or 4 times because we thought we were on the wrong side of it. Uh-huh. But it's kind of hard to navigate, but with the GPS, it takes a lot of pressure off. I could never do it without GPS. Never in a million years.
Yeah, to actually think and navigate, and you know, with the map and all
absolutely that. Absolutely no way. I mean, coming down off, I don't know if it's a Cheviots or Cheviots, but coming down there, it was waist deep in snow. Now, so we were trying to go through waist deep snow. There is no way you can follow a path. And interestingly, when we did it in the summer, it's amazing that some of the sections, how clear the path is and simple. Is
wow,
it's a lot of circles,
yeah.
It's a lot of circles, especially near the end,
yeah. Oh, and that must have taken away from your time as well. And when you're just like trying to get to those cutoffs and your feet really hurt, you really the last thing you want to be doing is going in circles.
The very last hill, which is called the Shill, we went round that I think 2 times maybe. We went up it came down it and went up it again.
Oh no. And how's your morale when all of this is going on?
At the end, it wasn't particularly great at the end, because we were struggling quite a bit with, a lot with sleep deprivation, to the point where we could do about 15 minutes and then we had to have about a minute's sleep. And then that gave us about 15 minutes worth of energy.
Yeah.
And then we probably have to have another minute. It got that bad at the end.
Wow. And did you just decide that as you went along? Was that in your plan? I suppose you can't know that, can you?
It got so bad that you were almost falling asleep as you were walking. Mm-hmm. As I came up the shill, I was seeing people that weren't there. So I was seeing people laid on the hill. And in my mind, I was walking through Hyde Park and there was people sunbathing.
Wow.
And I tried not to stand on people that were sunbathing. Then I realised, obviously, they weren't there because I wasn't in Hyde Park.
And it was snowing.
And it was snowing. So then I'd stand on people, but then I think, oh, maybe they are there, so maybe I shouldn't stand on them.
Oh, that's so sweet of you. You're not the kind of person that would go up Everest and walk over all those dead bodies in the death zone.
Yeah, so I'm not going to stand on them.
Yeah.
And we... At the very end, where we'd got lost a couple of times at the end, Dave went to sleep and I fell asleep. I woke up, I didn't know who he was. He didn't know who I was.
Oh, no.
I didn't know where I was. I thought I was finishing the Cotswold Way and I was in Bath. I was coming down into Bath and I was arguing with him, saying, we're only doing this race because you needed the points for finishing the race. And then we kind of came out of all the snow and the world all cleared and the last couple of miles were amazing.
Yeah, it's quite good. It's all downhill, isn't it? That last bit into Kirkyetton,
into
the pub.
Apart from it was icy.
Oh, no.
The road, the last stretch of road was just a sheet of ice. So we had to put our ice spikes back on again for the very last section, which didn't really like doing that. Just wanted to get to the end.
Yeah, you just wanted to ski down at that point.
Yeah.
And then so touching that wall at the end, like kissing that wall of the pub at the end, how did that feel, having gone through all of that?
Emotional. I managed to not cry until about the point where I came over the green at the end, and then I started to get really emotional. My other half had surprised me, and she was at the finish as well.
Oh, lovely.
It was quite emotional finishing it, really emotional finishing it. Such a long way.
Did you and Dave touch the wall together, or did you decide one of you was going to come in first?
No, I think we did touch it together. I don't know how he beat me overall, because we came through the finishing thing at the end.
But yeah, there's a minute between you on the time thing.
Maybe I need to bring a complaint.
Oh, I think you should. And so there's also a minus 12 by some people's names. What's that?
So we got a goodwill time because we helped somebody out.
Oh, okay. So is it minus 12 minutes on your time because you helped someone?
There was a chap who was struggling coming off Hadrian's Wall. And we'd caught up with him, so we stayed with him.
Ah.
And called into Race HQ, and we stayed with him for quite a while. So and then we stayed with him to make sure he was all right, because he didn't really know where he was and what was going on, and he was having a few issues. So we stuck with him for, I think we got 12 minutes goodwill time. I tried to argue that it had cost us hours, but they wouldn't have it.
Sounds like you did spend a couple of hours with him, but you got back in the time, like with 3 hours to spare, so you're all right. You could have gone out and done that last hill another time if you wanted to. And so you felt emotional crossing the finish line. And what does it mean to you to be able to say to people, I have completed the spine race?
I'm really proud of it, because I know that I haven't got the time that everyone else has got. And, you know, I think a lot of people have got a lot of time to go out there, and that's great, brilliant. I haven't, or if I did have that time, it would be at the detriment of my family life or work, and I do want to spend the time with my kids, and I don't want to go out and spend all weekend running. They were proud of me for finishing, so that makes me proud as well. And, I want my kids to think you can do anything as well.
Yeah.
That's really important to me, that they get a bit of motivation out of it. I don't think my youngest would want to do it, but my eldest is, you know, he's already started coming out running with me, which is brilliant.
That's good.
I want them to want to do it. So I was really, really proud of finishing it because, you know, it's a fair old challenge. Doing that.
Yeah. And what do you think about coming last? Like some people, you know, some people are worried about coming last in races, like probably a lot shorter than this one, but does it feature anywhere in your psyche or like, how do you feel about it?
You know what? It doesn't bother me at all.
Good.
I think there's a slightly different mentality around ultra running, isn't there, than other events. It's about the time. For a lot of people, when you get to this type of distance, it's about finishing. You know, I couldn't care less whether I was 20th or 80th. It doesn't make any difference to me.
Yeah.
No difference whatsoever. And being able to say I finished it, not one person has said to me, where did you come?
Yeah. No, unless you won.
Yeah, you know, nobody says that. You know, no one's interested in that. And it's about getting to the end of it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's, it's just about that, isn't it? And it's really not about where you come in the race, it's completing it and doing it and having that experience, like you said.
Yeah.
And everybody agrees on the live, Adele has written in, she says, it's great to hear an honest experience from someone who has had to juggle training around life, work and family. Well done, Graham. And today you says, it sounds like an amazing adventure. Well done for getting through to the end. And Hannah's wondering whether she should now do the summer or the winter.
I thought the summer would be easier, but I'm not actually convinced it is, to be honest.
Yeah, she said the heat. She did the summer Challenger South, and she said that the heat got to her towards the end. So she's considering a future winter Challenger North rather than doing the summer one. So
I'd say the advantage of the winter is you put your gear on Sunday morning and you don't take it off until the finish. You know, so you put your thermal layer, your mid layer, your waterproofs on and you're running it. In the summer, I had wet weather gear on, dry weather gear on, put wet weather gear back in your bag, it rains again, you get it back out again and you're forever messing around with it. Then your gear's wet because you put all your gear in your bag. Yeah, it's a different challenge.
Yeah, it does seem like a completely different challenge.
It's not easier.
Mm. Yeah, don't be fooled.
don't be fooled. It's still a long way.
Yeah, and Robert Cullen, who does a lot of these long-distance events, he says, well done, Graham, great achievement. Good luck in the Challenger North, starting at 6 p.m. in the dark. You'll breeze it.
Thanks. We start at 8 a.m. now.
Oh, 8 a.m. now, is it starting?
Yeah, they've changed it. Yeah, it starts 8 a.m. Monday now.
Oh, well, that's better. And so, is there anything that you wish you'd done differently? Like looking back and like taking things forward to your next ultras that you're doing.
I suppose the only thing with this one is to respect the distance a bit more, you know. And it isn't the same as running 100 miles. I think I managed fuel and food quite well. Didn't manage sleep very well, and maybe a little bit better planning on the distance. And this even for the Challenger. When I did a plan for the Challenger and worked out what time I think I'd finished. I then went and checked my first plan against the results from last year and apparently I was going to win. So I then realised that my plan wasn't right. So I worked backwards. You know, I just got to work it backwards. Where do I need to, and my other half has given me that piece of advice. He said, well, look at what the last time is you can be in and work backwards.
Yes, that's what I do. I put the cutoffs on my races because I'm like right at the back.
My planning, usually I look at the last place person, look at their splits, and then think that's what I need to do.
Yeah, you try and get in like 10 minutes before that.
Exactly.
And can you think of one thing that you would advise people should do more of in training? Like, is there one thing that you look back and you go, oh, yeah, if I'd have had time for that, I would have done more of that in my training?
Running.
Or actual running, even though you were walking for quite a lot of the race.
Hills. There's a lot of hills.
Yeah. 10,000 metres of hills.
I would walk more with your gear. Because
up hills.
Uphills, it's heavy, you know. That pack if you don't get out with it very often, you feel it on your shoulders, it'll dig into you. You've got to be used to carrying all the gear. You know, it's all right being able to say you can complete 100 miles with a small backpack. Try doing it with 10, 12 kilos on your back. It, you know, you need to be sure of it and make sure all your kit's all right.
Yeah. It's an expedition, isn't it, really?
Yeah, it is. It is. Yeah, it's exactly. It is.
Yeah. And we've got Rain Man Smith on the live chat says, so glad to hear that I'm not the only one who looks at the splits for the last paste.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a thing. That's why I'm doing this series. Yeah. So
the good thing is now everyone's looking at mine, Claire.
Yeah, yeah. You're famous now. So that's fantastic, Graham. Congratulations for completing it. What
Thank
is
you.
Next for you in 2024? You did mention the Challenger. Just tell us a bit more about what you're doing next.
Next week I'm back up to in the Pennines doing the Challenger, 160 miles. I think we get 5 days to do it. After that, I'm not entirely sure. Let's get this one out of the way. I probably got to finish the summer spine, as I didn't finish it last year. Although I haven't actually got approval from home to go and do that one, so we'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see. First thing is to get through the Challenger next week.
Yep, Challenger next week.
It's looking pretty cold.
Yes, I know. It's just gone cold again, hasn't it?
Yeah.
So good luck with all of that. We've just had a few more people giving some tips as well. Kingsley says, nothing new on race day. That's always a good one. Sounds like you definitely did that.
Yeah.
And Saragon McKenney says, thinking nice thoughts about someone can help push your pace. Did you do any of that? Thinking nice thoughts?
I don't think I've got any nice thoughts, if I'm honest.
Yeah. And Kingsley also says, and this is another reason why I'm doing this series, the last place person puts in so much more effort than the winner. It is kind of true, isn't it? I know that the winners do a lot of training, but in being able to do all that training, they actually don't go through some of the hardships that the last place person does on the race. So, yeah, I think I respect the last place runner or walker even more than the person who comes first, to be honest.
We get our money's worth, don't we? So we maximise our time.
Yeah, you definitely get your money's worth.
Yeah.
Okay, so before we wrap things up, we've got some quick-fire questions for you, Graham. So, flapjack or gels?
Flapjack.
Beer or wine after a race?
Neither.
Neither? Oh, what do you go for?
Water.
Water. Ah, oh, abstinence is very good. Kindle or real book?
Kindle, definitely.
Okay, music on your run or birdsong?
Music or what was the other option?
Birdsong, so no music.
On a race, no music. Training, music.
Mm-hmm. Camping or glamping?
Camping.
A seaside run or a mountain run?
Mountain.
Mountain, excellent choice. And would you describe yourself as an ultra runner or an ultra hiker?
I like to call myself an ultra runner, although I don't actually run that much. I try to.
An ultra tri runner.
Yep.
Awesome. Thank you, Graham. Well, before we go, I do need to remind everybody that the broadcast and podcast is sponsored by NAC, which is here, sports nutrition. They make long-lasting energy bars, waffles and drinks using high-quality sustainable ingredients. I will be using NAC on my Arc of Attrition 50 this January. Go and look at NAC.com for more and use our 15% discount code, which I will put later on in the film description below and the podcast show notes. So come back to find your discount code in there. But thank you so much, Graham. It has been a great pleasure to chat to you today about the Spine Race, and best of luck in your 2024 spiny endeavours.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Awesome. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.